Hi, Cardinal fans. I'm Ozzie Smith.
Smith corks one into right down the line. It may go.
And you're listening to the Cardinals Insider Podcast.
Go crazy, folks. Go crazy.
Here's your host, Brett McMillan.
Hello, welcome to the June 26th edition of the Cardinals Insider Podcast. My name is Brett McMillan. In just a little bit, we're going to be talking things over with the voice of the AAA Memphis Redbirds, Steve Selby. Plus, Jim Gilstrap, who writes for Cardinals Magazine, will join the program. He's the author of a new Cardinals Magazine article on Keith Hernandez. That coming up in just a little bit, and it is out now in the current volume of Cardinals Game Day Magazine. Before all that, we do want you to know that we're bringing the beach to the ballpark. Margaritaville Night returns Friday, June 29th. If you purchase a special theme ticket, get a Margaritaville Cardinals t-shirt. Come early for a pregame concert by the Boat Drunks. Tickets on sale now at cardinals.com/theme. Again, Margaritaville Night featuring the Boat Drunks. It's a pregame concert, and tickets are available at cardinals.com/theme. The team is home through July 1st, and then 8 games left at home here in St. Louis the rest of the month of July. So June 29th would be a really good chance to check them out. Make sure you get your Cardinal baseball fix before they head out on the road. All righty, first guest today, Steve Selby. As I teased at the top, he's been the play-by-play voice of the Memphis Redbirds since the year 2000, so nearly 20 years in the booth down there in Memphis, and he's been calling some really good baseball lately. As you probably know, Memphis won the PCL a year ago. It was a historic season for the franchise, and they had a pipeline going up I-55 to St. Louis all year as well. More of the same here this year. They have been toward the top of the standings. In fact, a pretty commanding lead in their division, and they have been supplying some really good talent, particularly young arms, to this Cardinal team up here in St. Louis as well. Steve and I talked about some of the top performers from this year's Memphis roster, a few maybe that you've seen in St. Louis, some yet to debut in the big leagues. We talk about what you might expect from them when you do see them with the big club. And we talk about the coaching staffs, too. There's some coaches that have really been praised for their laurels, I guess, been praised for the work that they've been able to do, including manager Stubby Clapp. So we talk about that and give you a little bit more of a picture of who the guys are that are shaping these young players before they get up here to St. Louis. So without further ado, here it is, Memphis Redbirds play-by-play voice Steve Selby on the Cardinals Insider Podcast. Longtime play-by-play voice of the Memphis Redbirds, Steve Selby, kind enough to join us here on the podcast today. Steve, fun to have you in here talking minor league baseball, AAA, and the Redbirds again this year, just clipping along at quite the pace. What's the buzz overall like there in Memphis just over this team?
Well, I think it's just the depth, just as it was last year when the club won the championship in the PCL. It's just, as you know, there's been a bit of a merry-go-round in the pitching staff, both starters and relievers, and whatever's left for the AAA club has been really good. And it's nice to know that there's depth on the farm. It's not just in pitching too, outfield, catching. And it's life is good if you're Gary LaRocque running the farm system right now.
Yeah, it is very good at a couple of different levels. And I have not been to a game in the last 2 years in Memphis, just for those listening, but it seems like, I know here in St. Louis, I hear more talk about Memphis because of the winning. Has the appetite maybe been a little bit more? And I see pictures of the ballpark, and it looks awful full down there.
Yeah, the attendance has grown over the last 2 or 3 years. New ownership, Peter Freund, involved with the club in conjunction with the Cardinals, and there is a lot of excitement doing some different things. Winning always helps. I think where it helps the most is the media follows you a little bit more. And so that's a great thing. But, you know, minor league baseball really is a social night out. So it's a combination of drawing those for a night out on the town to those diehard Cardinal fans.
You spoke about young pitching just a minute ago, and as you mentioned, we've seen a lot of it here in St. Louis, so I feel like a lot of the guys that we're seeing, you've seen too, and vice versa. There are a few names we haven't seen up here yet, and maybe a few names we've only gotten a taste of. As a guy who's watched, you know, the whole of that AAA staff, bullpen and starters, is there anybody that really has piqued your interest this year that maybe isn't quite on Cardinal fans' radar just yet?
Well, not on radar yet would be Dakota Hudson. He leads the league in wins. He's right there in earned run average, and it's just been rock solid all year long. He's going to give you 6, 7, 8 innings every time along. He's growing. He's going to get stronger. That's the thing. He's got a good enough fastball, but he's going to get stronger, and he'll gain a little more velocity. And he's a real intense competitor and just goes about his business. And he's in that log jam of talented right-handed pitchers.
He's got a nice, even kind of personality, much like a Michael Wacha and Adam Wainwright. Doesn't seem to get too high or too low. Has that been your experience with him, too? Just not even so much the pitcher, but just the man, the way that he kind of approaches the game.
I think you're right. You know, I think internally he's got a game plan on how he conducts his business, not unlike what I saw from Paul DeJong when Paul came through here 2 years ago. It's not just, you know, when the lights go on at 7 o'clock, he's got a game plan. He's just the way he conducts his business on and off the field and preparation prior to a workout or prior to an appearance. He's got a professional approach, and usually young guys are searching for consistency from day to day, and he's already past that.
I know we just saw Daniel Ponce de Leon up here with the Cardinals. Didn't get into a game yet, but I'm sure that definitely is coming. You know, everybody likes to talk about that injury, Steve, and let's start there, because I imagine that was quite the night for you at Triple A Iowa last year. To see Daniel get up here and get to put on that uniform in St. Louis, what was that like for you as a guy that was there that night?
Well, you know, number one, you're just, you know, grateful, thankful that he's healthy, because the prognosis was not good for him. And but I knew when he came back and joined the club in September, not to perform, obviously, but just to be around his teammates for a couple of days of the playoffs. And he said he was already felt like he was 90% back. You knew he would be back at pitching in Memphis this year. Now, with that year's rust plus the injury, I don't think anybody, including Daniel, had any idea he'd be this successful. Would find himself in the big leagues in the first half of the season.
Yeah, he's got the invite to the big camp before down in Jupiter, and I think this was maybe his third time that he'd been to big league spring training. Has been starting in Memphis. You know, when he did come up, they said probably a bullpen guy in St. Louis, and I think that's the thing that maybe has gotten lost a little bit, is about what he might offer as a pitcher. What have you seen from him this year, and what kind of is maybe the thing that's clicked for him in the last year or two or three that has positioned him to kind of be right on the precipice of making that debut?
I think he's a tall, gangly kind of guy. I think he's got some deception in his release, and maybe a hitter's able to pick up the ball and on. He's a guy I've told in talking with some of the announcers when you always ask us for a scouting report. I always say about Daniel, I want to be able to sit behind home plate in the stands and see his stuff from ground level to see why he is that effective. I think he is deceptive a little bit, and you know, so long as he keeps the ball down, he's in great shape. And you know, again, for him to be where he is amazing. And you know, and he takes his turn every fifth day.
I'll tell you, it's been quite the story this year to watch from afar, is Edward Mujica, who the Cardinal fans know quite well from a couple of years back. What has that been like, just watching Ed work and really kind of a resurrection of his career here with a second stint in the organization?
Well, from the start, the impressive thing for me about Mujica is, you know, he accepted a minor league contract and knew he was not going to pitch an inning in big league camp. And he knew that. He said, I have something left in the tank, and by having the uniform, I can come back and show that I do have something left. And he got off to a little bit of a slow start, but he's been on a roll the last couple of weeks. He saved 4 out of 5 chances, and he also has become a leader in that bullpen, a mentor to a lot of the young guys. And we do have a heavy Latin presence on the Memphis roster, and he's helping these young guys, you know, 22, 23-year-old guys, several guys from Cuba, not very strong in their English skills yet. And so he is nurturing these young guys. And I know Stubby Clapp is very appreciative for what he's doing for this ball club.
You mentioned Stubby, and boy, he's the George Kissel Award winner defending here, and just has been a huge asset to the organization, a guy that Cardinal fans probably remember a little bit, played here in St. Louis and played in Memphis for a long, long time. Give me an idea of Stubby and what it is that makes him so successful as a skipper.
Well, he commands respect, and he doesn't force it. It's just learned over time by the players, and that they know where they stand with him. He's up front, and he doesn't sugarcoat things. You know, he pats him on the back or he kicks him the rump, whichever is appropriate. But, you know, he got to the big leagues not because he was, you know, overly talented. He just outworked everybody, and he learned the game. And so he appreciates what these guys are going through, and he just, he's a player's manager. And, sometimes the guys who don't have all the ability are the ones who make the best managers or coaches, because they have to work harder. They have to learn the game more. And in talking with his manager at the time in Memphis, Galen Pitts, he said, you know, Stubby always spent time standing next to me in the dugout, asking questions, et cetera, et cetera. So I guess it was a foregone conclusion he would eventually manage.
He seems to really love that franchise and that city down there in Memphis too. Does that, I mean, I guess it's an obvious question, but does that help at that, you know, AAA level when a guy really is maybe more aware of the history in a place rather than just kind of making a stop along his ascension or growth through the organization?
Well, absolutely, and I think it also goes hand in hand with his love and respect for the Cardinals organization and what the Birds on the Bat stand for. But, you know, when Stubby played in Memphis, he was the most popular player. You know, his nickname was the Mayor of Memphis. And, you know, for years after he left the organization, I go out on speaking engagements, and when you take questions at the end of the day, somebody would ask, where's Stubby Clapp, what's he's doing? I mean, 10 years after the fact, they remember this minor league player. And so the fans love him, the media loves him, which helps us, of course. But he thinks it's his responsibility to promote the club in the community. It's not unusual. After batting practice, there'll be some kind of promotional effort with season ticket holders or some picnic. And Stubby just wanders out there in his uniform to just greet and say hello to everybody. And it goes over pretty well, I got to tell you.
Yeah, that's got to be great for business down there. There's no doubt about it. Another guy on his staff that really has been good for the business of hitting is Mark Budoska. And boy, there's buzz, I know, among Cardinal fans up here. What is it, about Mark maybe that makes him so approachable or kind of has him speaking the player's language? Because there just seems to be a tremendous amount of respect, especially from the players, for what it is that Mark offers.
Well, initially, and they appreciate this, is he's done the first day he looks at a player, he doesn't jump in and start telling them what they're doing wrong. He watches them for a while. A lot of times he'll wait until the player comes for help on their own. But what he does is he takes what the player has, and he doesn't have a one-style-fits-all. He takes what the player has to offer and tweaks it and makes them as good as they can. It's the subtle changes, really, that pays off. And then with these young hitters, you're having just, you know, teach them preparation for each at bat and what pitchers they're facing and all those kinds of things. But I think he's so low key in his demeanor with the players. It's not like a lecture or you have to do this. I just go, hey, you know, this is what I think will help you. And he obviously has a knack for seeing the flaws that these hitters may or may not have.
Oscar Mercado seems to have certainly established himself by this point as an outfielder. As you kind of watched him, over the last 2 years, get a feel for that. What has stood out to you about his transition? And this kid looks awful polished when you look at the box.
Well, he's made some plays in center field that are off the charts. He throws well. I mean, you can get overwhelmed by his range and his speed, but he's got a pretty good arm for a center fielder too. But he's got the natural speed, which helps him in the outfield. It helps him on the bases. And this is a guy I think he might surprise some people and hit a few home runs. He's, you know, just shy of 10 so far this year. But he's got, you look at him for kind of a slenderly built guy, he's got some big hands, which I think contributes to his power. And, you know, rightly so, talking about Tyler O'Neill's power and all that, Harrison Bader and what he's done so far for the big club. The sleeper in the whole bunch just might be Mr. Mercado. He's just 23. But boy, he's doing it. And I tell you what, getting on base a lot, serving as a great leadoff hitter down here.
Where do you think that power came from for him? Because I remember talking to him at winter warm-up, and if my memory serves correct, he kind of said, yeah, you know, I'm just really a line drive guy, and it just has kind of started to come. Is this a matter of him getting stronger from what you've seen, or is he doing something maybe a little different with his launch angle, or maybe he's just growing into his own as a player in general?
I don't think it's a launch angle thing, because he really is primarily a line drive guy. But as I mentioned, he's got big hands. And I'm not comparing these two, but Hank Aaron was not a big man. But you looked at his hands, and they were big hands. Reggie Jackson had big hands. So I think that's really where he gets the power that he has. How much he'll develop, I don't know. But it's, you know, it's not like he's changed his approach to hit the home runs or just line drives that get out of the ballpark.
Patrick Wisdom, once again, having a very nice season down there in Memphis. What's he like as a third baseman? I mean, we all see the bat, but when he handles the glove, how's he been in the infield this year?
I think he's solid. He's got some errors, but they're just kind of fluky errors, you know, in between hops that you'd like for a big league third baseman to make a play on. But he's making all the routine plays. I think he's a very solid third baseman. He's very accurate with his throws. And, you know, I think that's overlooked a little bit. He can help you at third base.
Steve, we really appreciate your time today. I think the last thing we want to ask you as we get ready to get you out of here is another great, as we speak right now, I mean, eight games up, I think, in the division down there in Memphis, coming off the PCL title last year. Anything that you're looking forward to that maybe we didn't talk about, whether it's a guy or just something that, again, people in St. Louis wouldn't necessarily know just from looking at the box scores, but the thing you're excited about in the second half of the Pacific Coast League season?
Well, like it is every year, really, in AAA, you want to find out what kind of club you're going to have down the stretch because there's so many transactions. And I know there, you know, guys coming off the disabled list, it seems like, you know, every other day in St. Louis, which is good for the big club. And so that means there'll be a filtering effect back to Memphis. And as I've told a lot of guys this year, you know, I don't care which players they send back. They're all really good players right now. So looking forward to see what kind of roster we have in the second half. And if the Redbirds can repeat their 17 championship.
It's been awesome to watch from afar. Hopefully, both the big club and the Memphis club finish strong here in 2018. Steve, thanks so much for your time. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Anytime.
Big thanks to Steve for his time. Good to talk about those young, budding Cardinal careers, and it's been fun to watch Memphis really just supply some top-notch talent here to St. Louis, and maybe even some more before the end of the year, some big names that we talked about. Perhaps we see them as Cardinals before 2018 is out. From those budding careers now to a retrospective on a Cardinal from the 1980s and those Whitey Herzog teams, Jim Gilstrap is the author of a feature in the current Cardinals magazine. It's titled The Book of Keith. It's about Keith Hernandez and the book that he released just a couple of months ago. I'm sure you've heard a lot about it. Jim was the guy who pieced together what Cardinals magazine did, just taking a look back at Keith Hernandez and his time as a Cardinal and the book that he has put together. He joins Ben Holtmeyer now. Guys, take it away.
Thanks, Brett. Ben Holtmeyer here, and I'm with Jim Gilstrap. We're going to talk about the Cardinals magazine. This is issue 3, and Jim is a senior editor. Now, this is not the cover issue of issue 3. The issue 3 cover story is on Miles Michaelis, but there's a really interesting story in this one about Keith Hernandez. And Jim, can you walk me through exactly what is this story on Keith Hernandez, and how much do you know about it as well?
Well, what we tried to do with this is to make readers aware, Cardinals fans, that when you see this book, and most people, I think it came out in May, so I think people probably are aware it's out there, or at least have heard about it. But if you see it in the store, or if you go online and you see the cover, it clearly looks like a Mets book, and Keith did finish play the majority of his career at the end for the Mets. He's been an analyst on their TV networks for 20 years now, and so the decision, I think, was made that he was going to, you know, when they did the cover, he's got the Mets colors on. And you might assume that it's a book about Keith Hernandez when he was a Met. And that's not the case at all as you start, if you do. And what we're saying is don't judge the book by its cover in this case, actually. Turn inside and you'll find out pretty quickly that it's about Keith's in his formative years with the Cardinals. He was actually in the Cardinals organization his first 12 years. Mm-hmm. Most people know him for the 82. You think about the 82 World Series Cardinals. You think about the 79 season when he was the batting champ and co-MVP. But this book really is about the time leading up to that 70 and through the 79 season. So when he came out of high school, he went into the minor leagues. It's about those experiences in the minor leagues and all the great Cardinals who helped shape his career during that time. So, when you see this book, don't be turned off by the cover and think, oh, this is it's. And I can say from reading it, and I read it in a weekend. And so it really is an easy read, and if you get into it, I think any Cardinals fan would find it interesting and informative and enjoyable.
Yeah, I certainly just was enjoyed me as a millennial was thrilled actually reading this because I really never knew the ins and outs of Keith Hernandez's kind of story coming up through the Cardinal system to the majors, and so I thought it was just very interesting about how many times the Cardinals and a lot of the people in the organization really gave him a chance, especially when it mattered even mentally for him. And so that's what I thought was really interesting. I'm getting ahead of myself here, but first I really wanted to ask, it talks about really him even growing up, and a really big moment in his life was seeing, that was his first game that he watched, correct? Was watching the Cardinals. Yes. Play the Giants at Candlestick Park, and he had a one-of-a-kind experience where he met some of the greatest players ever to live. Can you kind of tell me a little bit about that experience and how it happened and what it did for him?
Well, he's in San Francisco and saw the game at Candlestick. That's obviously he grew up near San Francisco. His dad played in the minor league system for the Cardinals for a couple of years, like in the late 40s, and during World War II, his dad was stationed in Hawaii and happened to play on a Navy baseball team with one Stan Musial. So that's where the two got to know each other, the father and Stan. So, you know, fast forward to this, 1963, several years later, it's Stan's last in the majors. So he gets the tickets and gets into the clubhouse through his through the relationship with Stan. So that's what Keith's doing there. He's all excited, just to be there, to see these guys, and then he gets the chance to go in the clubhouse, and so this tells the story of he's sitting on the stool next to Stan Musial. He's 9 years old. These guys are his heroes. And then, and then Ken Boyer walks over. And it's just, it's a really interesting story because you think at the time, who knows, Keith Hernandez mm-hmm. is going to be in the major leagues. He's ever going to make it there. And he does. He gets there with the Cardinals. And then, in his career, he's managed by Boyer at the Triple A level and then the major league level. So it's just kind of one of those stories that hard to believe that mm-hmm. you think, there's the kid sitting there, and then 11 years later he's playing in his major league debut is at the same ballpark,
right?
At Candlestick. and he's so it's just fascinating that story alone. There's so much in the book about his relationship with his father, how his father, who was a very successful hitter in the minor leagues and 300 hitter, and how Keith growing up, his father is the one who instructed he and his brother, and it was just daily instruction. And at the time, Keith doesn't realize it, that, it's pretty hard. But when he gets back to the majors, all that's going to pay off for him. And so as you go along in the book, it's kind of you'll read both of those experiences where he tells a story in a chapter about, his childhood working with his dad, his brother. And then he takes you fast forward to a situation that's happening, you know, when he's coming up through the Cardinals system in the minor league. So it's just it's a nice quick read too. You jump back and forth between it, mm-hmm. and it's just an easy read to go through that time.
And now to catch up to myself, I've really again thought it was pretty, like you said, it was just such a solid story about how the Cardinals gave him so many chances in multiple ways in multiple seasons. One being in his minor league career, his coach at the time, that was Bob Kennedy, is the one who promoted him. Can you kind of walk through that kind of first time that happened?
He was actually, now Kennedy was actually the farm director. So he's the one who was behind the Cardinals actually drafting Keith. Keith had, just for a quick story there, he didn't play his senior season of high school. And he says it's because his coach was a bit of a jerk, as the book says. So there's teams backed away from him in the draft. They weren't sure, you know, that back in 71, they weren't sure, you know, what was going on. And so Kennedy, the Cardinals saw his talent. I mean, other teams did too, but the Cardinals were one who were willing to take a chance on him. They didn't get him to like the 42nd round, which you think about that now, it's like this guy was a 42nd round pick.
Yeah.
And so mm-hmm. Kennedy's the one then who sees his talent, takes a chance on him. So you fast forward and you're in the you know, he's in the minor leagues. It's Keith's second season, like 73, and he's at double A ball and he's just having a terrible time and batting probably low 200s. And, you know, then Kennedy comes in to talk to him. And the last thing he expects to hear is, Keith, we're promoting you. And that's what happened. Instead of sending him down, which, you know, would be the normal reaction in most systems, the Cardinals and Kennedy at that point felt like they were going to send him up and this was going to motivate him. And it did. And he credits it at that time, that being like the first – saving my career, you know, kind of move, was the confidence that he had in him. It sent him up, and then Keith went up. He played 30-some-odd games at AAA and hit, you know, over 300. And so that was, you know, the first instance of somebody he speaks of who really had an influence on those times.
And another one that's mentioned is Ranchides, of how much Red meant to Keith Hernandez.
There and there's a lot, there's a great deal in there about Red, but one of the example that we give in the story is that in the 76 season that Red had benched Keith early in the year because Keith wasn't hitting, he was below 200, and he realized it, but Red had also told him in the second half, you know, and they knew Keith was a prospect who was struggling, but he was, you know, a future there. So Red told him, I promise, you know, in the second half of the season, you know, we're going to play you every day and put you out there and give you the chance. And Keith is, you know, says, you know, Red was a man of his word, and he did that. And Keith ended up finishing the season really well. It wasn't the best time for Red because right. He ended up losing the job that mm-hmm. year. The team didn't finish with a good record, but it was an amazing run for Red. We talk about it, that was 12 years, you know, which is just at the time, you know, that was unheard of for the Cardinals. And so, but in the end, he says, you know, and when talking about Red with high praise, and he said, calls him the angel on his shoulder. Mm-hmm. So, you know, with Red's passing and recently, and there's so many stories of people who say that, you know, he was always there, you know, always a kind word, always a motivating word. And this book obviously was written before that, but here's Keith echoing, you know, what everyone else says about Red. So that is a really nice story.
And then to tie it together about meeting Ken Boyer as a 9-year-old, and now Ken Boyer is one who kind of maybe you could say assisted in propelling Keith Hernandez to have his batting title season.
He did, and so first say that he had managed Keith during stints at AAA when he was at Tulsa for during the 74 and 75 seasons. So now we go to the 79 season, and Ken Boyer is the manager in St. Louis now. It's his first full season. He had started the job, you know, the year before. But again, Keith is struggling. It's May. He's batting 236, I believe it was. They're on a plane trip to Houston. He's been hearing whispers, and there've been whispers in the media. Maybe they're going to give some other guys some time at first base. Keith's wondering, maybe I'm just a 250 mm-hmm. hitter after all. Maybe that's all I'll ever be. So he's got plenty of self doubt here. And then on that plane trip, the Boyer just walks back from first class, and he sits down and tells him. He says, "You know, I believe in you." He says, "Don't worry about anything. I'm going to play you every day the rest of the way, whether it costs me my job." And imagine hearing that from a manager. And then Keith goes out first game in Houston. He has a 4-for-4 night. He's batting, you know, 300 by the end of the month. And he goes on and ends the season hitting, you know, 344, right, which is the best in the majors that year. He beats Pete Rose in the National League by, I think it was 13 points, co-MVP with Willie Stargell. And he says, had it not been for that conversation, he doesn't know if he would have ever made it in the right. Big leagues, if it would have turned out. So just amazing story when you, and again, I mean, those, the book is full of them. I mean, if you want to really read about people in the Cardinal system who had an influence on him, and there's other great people, George Kissel, mm-hmm. Joe Medwick, you know, the Triple Crown winner. There's stories with all of them. Bob Gibson, whom Keith said was rather intimidating.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that one. That's in a kind of an additional kind of sidebar in this story, and it's hilarious.
I mean, a lot of people have said that about Gibson, and certainly opponents were intimidated by him more than any. But the story that he tells a couple about Gibson, but one of the fun ones is that Keith had he'd made his first opening day roster, and this was 1975. And, you know, Gibson, that's his final season in the majors, his 17th year. So, you know, you've got the rookie and the crusty veteran. But the story he tells is there's, you know, he's at a party early in the season. It's a party at Reggie Smith and his wife are throwing. And all the people are there, other teammates. And so Keith's sitting around there playing, you know, R&B music, which seemed to be the favorite that night. And one of his friends who he's there with says, "Hey, Keith, would be a great idea if, you know, your apartment's close by. How about going back and bringing some of your albums over and let them listen to your music, you know?" And you know how we all are, you know, we think our music, you know, we want to everybody else to like what we like, right?
I can really relate to this one, for sure.
So Keith runs back to his apartment, and he comes back with about 20 albums, and he's got them in his arm, and he opens the door, and Gibson doesn't say a word, but he makes eye contact with him, and he said, "Oh, right then I knew what anybody who faced Gibson during his career felt like. It's like, young man, you're crowding the plate." And so Keith puts the stack of albums down next to the door and doesn't say another word. So he leaves his music there. And then just the rest of the evening, it's very comical, you know, and I won't give away everything about right. The story, but And he also talks about a couple of clubhouse incidents there where that he was in the training room and, you know, basically had a blister on one of his fingers that he was tending to. And that Gibson came in and was not happy to see that, told him he didn't want to see him in the training room again. And Keith said, maybe not that politely. And then Keith said, so I wasn't in the training room again the rest of the season. And so, but there, and the good thing there is, you know, he does, he says, you know, he had came to understand that Gibson was harder on the people that he saw a lot of potential in. And that's because that's the way his brother Josh had been with him growing up. And Keith came to realize that, hey, he just wanted to, he saw the potential there in me, and he was trying to make sure that, you know, I knew that and didn't waste that opportunity. And
he said he kind of understood that more when he read Gibson's book.
Yes, yes, yes.
From Ghetto to
Yeah,
Glory.
Back then I don't think understood as much, but just knew that he was a tough customer, at least on the outside. But and just to, you know, not to stray too far off, but I mean, Gibson is going to be the subject of our yearbook, which comes out in July, and that's on 1968, his historic season,
yeah.
You're the Pitcher. And I say that only because there are a lot of stories in that yearbook, the wonderful stories about reflections on people who faced Gibson and his teammates, and so you get that. And this was a kind of, you know, reading Keith's book as we're planning that edition, and it's like, wow, everybody's got Gibson stories that are great, right? Even Hernandez has a great story there. So it was just really, really fun, you know, coming across that in the book, as well as just all the stories about the other coaches, mentors, players. Ken Reed's Ted Simmons, he talks about being close with those guys. And Lou Brock, you know, we talk about there's a really great story in there. Mm-hmm. When Keith is struggling and Lou comes down, you know, 15 years apart in age.
Sweet Lou.
Sits down next to him and basically tells him, stop pouting, you know, Keith, it's not about you. He said, don't get mad. He said, if you're going to get mad at anybody, get mad at the pitcher. He's the one trying to take your job, you know. So just all kind of anecdotes and relevations about his time. And I think people really will enjoy those.
Yeah, that's makes me want to read the book for myself, honestly. And yeah, I think it's a really, really solid story in the magazine right now. Again, it's issue 3, and it has Miles Michaelis on the cover of that. Is there anything more, Jim, you want to say about the yearbook or issue 3? I know, can you say again when that yearbook's coming out?
Fans will be able to look for it. It's going to be early July. It'll be available. You know, it'll be available to purchase online. It'll be available at the ballpark. The stores where you find Cardinals magazine. So just keep an eye on that. I mean, that's going to be a real keepsake. It's just wonderful. All the stories with Gibson. The great thing is each of his 37 starts that year, including his World Series starts, there's a story on each of them that focuses, and it's just amazing to follow that season, the progression, 15-game win streak in there, ends up, you know, with the 1.12 ERA that all fans, if you say that number in Cardinals Nation, everybody knows what that is, mm-hmm. right? So this is kind of the story behind it and what happened. And then the current issue with Miles Michaelis on the cover, there's a great story there that really hasn't been told about how the Cardinals scouted him and what they saw when he was pitching in Japan that convinced them that he could be the pitcher that Cardinals fans are seeing here, you know, right now this, at this point in the season. And really nice story about Jose Martinez, about that crazy batting stance and all the stuff that he does when he comes to the plate. He tells you why he does that, and it's a really interesting story, unique perspective there from him. And then I also want to say quickly that we've got Bob Costas bobblehead theme night coming up at the park on June 25th. He's going. He's being honored with a Ford C. Frick Award this year. You know, the Hall of Fame, and that comes up at the end of July, last weekend there. So we've got an in-depth interview with Bob where we talk with him. He started his career, most people probably know, at KMOX. It's just, he's wonderful to talk to, and that's another story in that in this third issue of the magazine. I mean, it's well worth your time. Just amazing perspective on the game today. A lot of good stories about when he was starting out in St. Louis and how much St. Louis really means to him still and has over the years. So I think people will really enjoy that one as well.
Perfect. Thanks, Jim. Really appreciate the time.
Great. Glad that you had me.
And you can find all this, the Cardinals Magazine and the yearbook, of course. Just as Jim said, you can find it online, or you can call the Cardinals ticket office, and that's 314-345-9000. Once the yearbook comes out, they'll be happy to help you out with that. They can give you a full subscription as well to Cardinals Magazine and online. It's cardinals.com/magazine or cardinals.com/publications. Brett, I'll send it on back to you.
Thank you, gentlemen. Thanks to Ben. Thanks to Jim. Check out Cardinals Magazine at your local grocers. If you're in the St. Louis area, you can pick one up at Busch Stadium, the team stores, and also, I believe, anywhere that they sell scorecards. And if you're out of the market or you just want to have it shipped right to your house, it's a great value, and it also makes a great gift. They do gift subscriptions. Head on over to cardinals.com/publications. I think you'll be really impressed with the quality and with the price. I have been a subscriber long before I worked here. Cardinals Magazine. It is a must-have if you are a Cardinal fan. Hey, as I mentioned earlier in the show, just 9 home games in the month of July. I can't ever really remember that in my time working for the team or as, you know, a fan, but that's just kind of the way the schedule breaks out this year. The first home game in July is on July the 1st. That day, 30,000 fans, 16 and older, are going to take home an adult bucket hat courtesy of Coca-Cola, and kids 15 and younger entering with a ticket receive a kid's bucket hat. So what do you know? Mom and dad get a bucket hat, and the kiddos get one too. It's all courtesy of Powerade. Tickets available now at cardinals.com/promotions. Our promotions team does a great job. They put together a lot of great items. I've got to say, I think the bucket hat is one of the favorite ones that I've gotten the chance to see and hold and look at this year. We headed out on a shoot with Ozzie when we were doing his wraparounds for the Cardinals Insider TV show. He holds it up, looks at it, does a little read for the show, and it's a really handsome-looking product. I'm looking forward to seeing those on July the 1st. You can get yours, again, by purchasing a ticket at cardinals.com/promotions. We'll hope to see you at the ballpark for that. We'll hope that you're back with us next week as well as we welcome Super Bowl MVP Kurt Warner to the program. He was in town for Kurt Warner night earlier this season. We had a chance to sit down with him, talk a little bit about, you know, playing football, but more than that, just his admiration, respect, appreciation for the city of St. Louis, why he is still involved here. I mean, he's a presence here, especially on the charitable front in St. Louis. He talked about the community, had some really nice things to say. We will bring that one to you. It'll be out by 5 p.m. on Tuesday, July the 3rd. We try to put them out so that way, if you're getting in the car after work, the episode is available. Maybe check it out even before the game as you head on and make the ride home after work that day. You can listen, rate, subscribe on iTunes or cardinals.com/podcast. We really appreciate when you do that. Plus, you can email me thoughts on the show, something you would like to hear, something you maybe you'd like to hear less of. I always invite and welcome your feedback, podcast@cardinals.com. That's it for this time. For Steve Selby, Jim Gilstrap, and Ben Holtmeyer, I'm Brett McMillan. Always a pleasure talking with you. We hope to talk to you next time on the Cardinals Insider Podcast.